office. We've been up all night. We wanted to wait a little while to give you a chance to awaken. Remember that we must know the commentary of the position papers and policy of the Guyana government about imperialism, the Prime Minister's supportive statements of house cleaning in our beautiful country of Guyana, also the commentary on the Baki decision, the commentary on that horrible ABC TV racist documentary, and the new summary of the last part, the very end of the Tuesday agricultural town farm meeting. Other news is bonus news unless told otherwise. New members of the community, we do ask that you be responsible for testing for the Huey Newton tape. The news today has that there is combat between the Palestinian Liberation Front and the Israelis renewed in Lebanon. Retaliations back and forth, very severe and very frightening. The Middle East is threatening world peace. A bomb was thrown into a supermarket this morning in Tel Aviv, the capital of Israel. 49 people have been critically injured. One is already dead. In Salt Lake City, Nevada, a member of the Mormons or the Church of the Latter-day Saints, a religious fanatic who considered himself a true prophet according to the teachings of the Mormons, committed suicide off on the 11th floor of a modern apartment building. Thereafter, his wife threw over the three very young children, and ordered the four, ranging from 7 up to 14, to jump, which they did to their deaths, and then she jumped also to her death. 8 people died in tragedy because the Church of the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, apparently did not respond to some of his insights from his religious disillusionment or delusions, but it is a tragic event. So many lives were affected by one official of the Church of the Latter-day Saints of Mormonism. Terrible floods, the worst in history, flash floods throughout Texas, 9 again today, killed and 20 are missing. 2 fascist terrorists have killed the representatives of the Palestinian Liberation Front in Paris this morning. Frightening link between cancer and atomic power.
From pain when he hoped that there were still prospects for peace. Dr. Ellsberg wept when he talked about the assassinations in the United States and jailing of young war resistors and social activists. Dr. Ellsberg plans to live out the remainder of his life in Kensington and work on another book if he has time. He said his decision to release the Pentagon Papers meant very great loneliness because he was shunned by many friends and relatives. There were friends who never talked to me again. And the condition is permanent and growing once again in the terror of the right-wing mood in the United States. Late news, China receiving 160,000 Chinese evacuating Vietnam. Chinese ethnics who have gone over the border for resettlement in communist China from Vietnam. They are in collectives such as our beautiful family here in Jonestown. for political reorientation. They have to learn current Chinese because Chinese is forbidden in Vietnam in order to bring about assimilation and integration of the reunified Vietnam. The leading teacher of the political orientation in the doctrines of Mao and interpretations of Marxist-Leninism by Prime Minister Wei is a comrade teacher who spent 10 years in jail in Vietnam, says he, for teaching Chinese, according to the BBC. Thailand General Head of State has gone to Beijing, China, on his way home from the Belgrade, Yugoslavia non-aligned nations meeting of over 100 nations. He's urgently seeking better relations with China, fearing the influence of Vietnam and the Soviet Union in the Near East. It looks like Thailand will become the next ally of China. The Chinese Prime Minister, the first time a high-ranking deputy of state in China, will be going to Bangkok also, the capital of Thailand, to firm up a firm alliance between Thailand and China. Unfortunately, nationalism does prevail. That's why it is so dangerous and why Dr. Ellsberg is so right that it was bad to have nuclear technology before man had evolved just a little bit longer towards the road of international socialism. Vietnam was a form of socialism that's good domestically. China with one that is excellent domestically. The Soviet Union with one that is excellent, and even an international policy that has been very pro-liberation in Africa and elsewhere. But all in conflict because of ethnic and national differences. There is not time, unfortunately, in the nuclear age for this internationalism which would come because of the refining genius of socialism. It would come if there was time, but nuclear war will not wait. But scientists the world over are saying that this will survive, this zone of peace here that has been agreed upon by the Soviet Union, China, and the USA. It will survive almost relatively untouched at this point in time. And I suppose from the doctrine of three worlds, that is why China is trying to get it on the way, because Dr. Ellsberg feels that nuclear war is due any day. Portugal is trying to form a party on a non-political line after the collapse of Prime Minister Soares' socialist and conservative coalition. It is feared by many that there may be another military regime, though it is stoutly denied by most all parties except the communist. But all parties, communist, socialist, will have to go along with the solution. Express concern by all of the left parties, particularly over too much power being in the hands of President Janusz. But there are no party coalitions that can succeed the socialist prime minister. So he will have to form a prime ministry on a non-political line, a person with no ideological commitment. The International Monetary Fund has had devastating influences on Portugal, which was one of the few liberations by Marxist elements in the military, a coup to the left. But the IMF can be deadly, particularly if commitments are required. Dr. Soares said that he hoped that there would be in Portugal an emerging kind of consensus politics, as there had been in Spain until the recent upsurge of the far right. General elections seem to be coming in October in Canada, as they are also in England or Great Britain or the United Kingdom. In Great Britain, it is a sad state of affairs that the polls show a Margaret Thatcher, racist, will be the next Prime Minister under Conservative government rule. But the polls show that Prime Minister Trudeau is really a socialist at heart, but now an apologist because of the reactionary hold of U.S. imperialism on Canada's economic life. He is attempting to convince the Canadians that he can do a better job than the Conservatives. He has a slight lead. The Quebec Party, the Separatist Independent Party of Quebec, where all the rich uranium is, the second richest uranium deposit in the world in Canada, is all nearly in Quebec, have at least likelihood of gaining 40% on a referendum vote that will take place in the fall for separation of Quebec into an independent state. It has a powerful ally in Claude Ryan. New language regulations will be required if Quebec, the Separatist Party, is to go on with its coalition with Prime Minister Trudeau, and a great deal of independence will have to be allowed the French-speaking Quebec state. It is still uncertain whether the left-leaning, pro-African liberation, Quebec separatists will be able to gain their independence. But most world economists, including capitalists, do not believe that the U.S. monopoly capitalists will permit Quebec, the Quebecois, or the Quebec province to become independent because it possesses too much uranium and the Quebec separatists, French-speaking, are too pro-left. Australia, growing industrial unrest, strikes, electricity blackouts, work stoppages, high inflation, spiraling prices, vast unemployment, no areas to park cars, air is polluted beyond safety, sea air is rusting out vehicles and they are being abandoned in many urban centers on the coast in that beautiful continent of Australia. This is some of the high points of the news. The Ellsberg commentary is indeed required if we do not have a test tonight. If we wait till tomorrow, you will definitely have to know the Ellsberg commentary as well as the morning news. But the rest that I gave you is bonus. You get it. You gain extra credit in time and other benefits. Major ruling on prisoner rights. The Supreme Court in a major decision on prisoner rights today ruled that federal judges may limit the time state officials can keep inmates in punitive isolation. The justices in an 8-1 decision upheld a lower court ruling that Arkansas prison officials impose cruel and unusual punishment on inmates by forcing them to stay in special punishment cells for as long as a year. However, the Supreme Court did not give a particular limit on how long they will be able to keep people in punitive torturous isolation. High Court upholds limit on liability in nuclear accidents because of the vast number of nuclear accidents in USA. The Supreme Court has ruled yesterday again in favor of the class system that Congress did not violate the constitutional rights of potential victims when it voted 21 years ago to limit the damages a private nuclear power company would have to pay in the event of a nuclear accident, even if it destroyed a whole city or state caused by one of its plants. The decision reversed a lower federal court finding that Price-Anderson Act, the law that limits liability for any single nuclear accident to only $560 per person or $560 million per total accident, even if it destroys a state, was unconstitutional. Both the United States government and the nuclear power industry
have viewed the lower court decision as a serious setback to capitalism, since the power companies have maintained for decades that they could not afford to continue in business without a limit on the potentiality of vast legal liability for a nuclear catastrophe, even if it destroys cities and states and whole regions. Well, the court has always upheld the ruling class. It decided clearly in favor of the big nuclear corporations. We are saddened to see this right-wing turn. Mexico's abandoned children. Every month about 300 Mexican children, most of them mentally ill, are abandoned by their parents, the Mexican Attorney General office says, just in the vicinity of Mexico City alone. The sadness. Public gives school board an earful at hearing over the influence of racism in San Francisco schools and the pro-rightist tendencies of most of the remaining teachers. Most minority teachers have been let go because of the Proposition 13. Court orders Bakke admitted, but affirms admission by race, upheld that you can consider race, but not required to. So virtually there is no opportunity now for black or Indian to go to any professional school. As you know, the U.S. reporters face stiff sentences for slander against the Soviet media, the Soviet government. Correspondents for the Baltimore Sun and the New York Times. Death beatings raise tension in Brooklyn. The death of a prominent black leader while in police custody yesterday and the beating of black youth, allegedly by a group of Hasidic Jews, has caused a new racial tension in Brooklyn. The first incident occurred just a week ago yesterday when a businessman and community leader, prominent Arthur Miller, 36, died soon after being arrested in a scuffle with more than a dozen police officers. Witnesses say Miller was choked to death by the police. An assistant medical examiner said his death was also caused by an arm or nightstick as well as a strangulation. On Friday last, Victor Rhodes, 16, was beaten into a coma and finally died. Two young men have been arrested in the attack. They have been charged with assault and attempted murder for acting in concert with 30 to 50 others not apprehended to cause the death of Victor Rhodes by kicking and punching him. They were a Nazi mob. Police so far have taken no action against the officers involved in the Miller murder, which began when Samuel Miller, 21, Arthur's brother, was arrested for driving with a suspended license. The police department said it would finish an internal investigation before deciding what to do. The usual way police have of stepping out of responsibility. Judge Roast, ex-CIA agent. Without giving a formal verdict, trial judge Oren Lewis said yesterday, former agent Frank Schiff committed a willful, deliberate breach of the highest trust, and he did it for money in publishing the truth about the CIA and was doing it without the CIA permission. That book, you know, was quite an eye-opener into CIA's murderous activities. Sniff himself told reporters he had not submitted his book for CIA censorship because the agency would have torn the book to shreds because of the truth it told about its police state methods used on an unsuspecting people. Proposition 13 won clearly in San Francisco in a clear right-wing turn for San Francisco. The Housing Authority and my successor, Cleo Wallace, has been brought under federal charges, and several aides, including the director, the black director, is being considered for criminal prosecution. The mayor has asked for their immediate dismissal. They found that money had been used for unwanted traveling, staying in fancy hotels, all the things that I release, but they did not want a socialist to get that credit. Everything I expose has now been confirmed, and it just got too big to handle, said one commentator. Too big, they couldn't contain it anymore, because I revealed it all well over a year ago. Well over a year ago, I knew and showed what was going on. U.S. restricts Libya trade, sanctions against refugees. The Carter administration is holding up sales to Libya of over $400 million in trucks and spare parts in an effort to discourage that country from aiding international freedom fighters. Similar sanctions have also been imposed on Iraq, South Yemen, and Algeria as part of an evolving policy to combat the international struggle for the liberation of Africa, according to State Department sources. What an admission. Missionaries killers hunted in Rhodesia. We know who they were, but the hunt still goes on, the charade, the circus by the white Rhodesian regime. Actually, it was Rhodesian troops with tracker dogs that hunted down the 12 British missionaries, women and children, and killed them in the bloodiest incident against civilians by the white Rhodesian government. Then they blamed it on the black nationalist Zimbabwean Patriotic Front leader. The rest of the world knows what's going on, except the British mood was affected by it, and so the British public and the United States public was also affected by it. They lifted the ban of arms based on that CIA maneuver. Now they'll allow all the arms that the white fascist government of Jan Smith wants. The news is unfortunately not the kind I'd like to give you. I'd like to give you positive encouragement, rays of hope. Jerry is moving against the Red Brigades again because of the escape of several in Italy. Jerry, after the longest deliberation in modern history, Italian history, convicted Red Brigade leader Renato Curcio and 28 others yesterday of kidnapping and belonging to a subversive organization. The Red activists were immediately sentenced to a total altogether of 210 years, but several of them escaped already. Those Red Brigade, they are a militant bunch. They brought about socialism, at least. They now have a socialist president in Italy. Experts arrive in Vietnam to look into vitamin deficiencies. Four-member team of nutritional experts is now in Guyana studying the local situation pertaining to all nutritional anemias and vitamin A deficiencies. Havana continues to explode with festival merriment in the great unity of non-aligned and socialist nations. Tables stood in open air, strolled with food and drink. Music blared from loudspeakers, and flags and decorations of socialism drifted in the warm night breeze. Last night was the moment when the citizens of Havana threw a party for over 20,000 young guests from over 140 countries. They were the delegates at the World Youth Festival, here taking a break from political discussions, shows, and cultural events to visit Cuba in that lovely island, a free territory of socialism in this Caribbean. The general news is about, I think, covered. I see no particular new news. I hear nothing. The gold market continues to rise. As you know, it's near $900 now an ounce in Guyana for an ounce of gold. $900, that's a lot. Patriotic Front leader Joshua Nicola, who visited Guyana and is now in Jamaica, said U.S.'s desire
In Africa, once a puppet government in Rhodesia, Namibia, has no intention of seeing a free people emerge. He has reiterated the right of Cubans to be there and the front's intention to fight until Zimbabwe is free. In a press conference yesterday afternoon in Jamaica, Joshua Nkomo, who arrived in the island late Monday afternoon, noted that Western hostilities still remain, adding that they wanted puppet governments in Rhodesia and Namibia, feeling that Angola and Mozambique were both lost to the West. But even they are in question now, as they are being bombed by U.S. and fascist Union of South African planes. Lebanon is in a state of constant war, as fighting and struggling retaliations go on between the left-leaning Muslims and the right-wing Christian phalangists and the neo-fascist Zionists of Israel. Rioting, 300 killed and 800 arrested in Tehran. Even though the Shah of Iran has a bloody dictatorship where there is no personal liberty, the government yesterday was forced to confirm that several people were killed, many hundred, dozens injured, and many more hundreds arrested as anti-government people in riots, they said, were created, but actually were brought about by the dread SAVAK, the CIA of Iran. Egypt criticizes the United States. Cairo, Egypt, yesterday created Washington, expression of deep disappointment as President Anwar Sadat rejecting further direct peace talks with Israel unless it dropped demands for territorial compromise. Foreign Minister Mohammed Ibrahim Kamel said Egypt was not withdrawing from further talks, but territory and sovereignty were not matters for discussion. Christina Onassis, wed, and her husband, which according to Moscow law he can do, took on her name and will probably be at the helm of the Greek shipping magnate Aristotle Onassis' daughter's entire fortune, because she got most of it. The half-hour ceremony, which had Western journalists swarming around the street wielding palace, cost the Soviet equivalent of just over $2. Ms. Onassis, 27, had arrived in Greek diplomatic battered yellow Chevrolet and declared, "After the ceremony, I feel fine, very good in such a great democratic country as the Soviet Union." It was the bride's third marriage and Mr. Kozlov's second. They only had 10 outside guests. I can see no other news that would be pressing at this time, so keep the bonus news. Leading newspaper articles say that Carter has lost his popularity appeal, which is down now, the 30%, 70% disapproving, because, as one magazine cruelly calls it, Time Magazine, that Carter's relatives are kooky, that they are creeps and weird. I suppose the slander comes against Carter on the wake that Dr. Castro unfortunately said that he felt that Carter had good intentions, but he was surrounded by the same people that Dr. Ellsberg affirmed, even though they didn't know each other. So I suppose Mr. Carter is going to have to be smeared so he will not be the next president again, because Carter has said that he was the best man to have ever come along. He tried to normalize relations with Korea and Cuba. He said before, Dr. Castro said before, the military-industrial complex was able to take over his mind. Standing by.
continuing with more of the news. This will be your news for the day, so be sure you have gotten it down for bonus news. It's important that you get as much news as you can. Be sure that the mothers get proper diet, the expected mothers, because you can determine the health of your baby. Be sure that you breathe deeply and exercise vigorously. Even normal work will not assure you of being free from cancer, heart disease, and strokes. It says that you must exercise vigorously. That only strenuous exercise, strenuous work, will give good health. Remember that. Now, this is the last medical society left on Earth that affirms that. British Medical Society had said it, American Medical Society, and now the Soviet Medical Society makes the same statement. So the major medical societies all agree that only hard, strenuous work will give you good health. Oh, how lucky you are that are in the fields and do not have mental strain and do not have to lead in administration. And know how stupid some of you are who don't use all your time and sit around too much when you're in supervisorial roles when you could be doing vigorous work, because you are increasing your risk of heart attacks, cancer, and kidney disease, you name it, the disease, and you increase your risk at least 84%. 84%. Unless you do strenuous exercise. Not just ordinary routine work or walking. You can walk all the day long. A regular program of vigorous exercise can markedly reduce a person's chances of having all the diseases I meant. Heart attack, strokes, cancer. Those who do not exercise or work strenuously run a much greater risk, 84% greater risk of having heart attacks, strokes, cancer, kidney failure, according to the University of California School of Public Health. They are convinced that sedentary living is an important characteristic predisposing to coronary heart failure, hypertensive strokes, and cancer. The study was concluded after 16,936 people were brought into laboratory testing in Harvard between 1916 and 1950 and the University of Pennsylvania between 1931 and 1940, and they found conclusively that the harder work you do, you must expend no less than 2,000 calories. You have to. That you must use that a day. I mean, work it up hard, move vigorously. If everyone had been over the 2,000 calories a day of energy, there would only have been 80 fatal heart attacks out of what was a normal heart attack rate for every, let me see, 10,000, which would be 315. That's a lot of heart attacks. Exercise can also help smokers. If you take people who smoke and divide them into the activist and inactive, inactive are at a higher risk of heart attack and lung cancer. Dr. Peter Wood, Deputy Director of Stanford University Medical Disease Prevention Program, said the studies tended to show that if you fall for every vice going, such as smoking and overeating, at least keep on working hard. Jogging, squash, handball, and swimming are among the strenuous exercises. Are working in agricultural areas, working hard. That's the best protection. Participants in light sports such as bowling, walking, leisurely biking, and golf are no better off than the inactive people, said he. The expert on that case was Dr. Poffenbarger, who headed the University of Pittsburgh's Medical School. Notre Dame University president, who has been known for his liberal stance on civil rights, Reverend Theodore M. Hesburgh, states unequivocally he saw, along with several other dean's associates, UFOs. The men were fishing for bass in a small lake in northern Michigan at dusk when suddenly the sky lit up with an incredible sight. As I looked to the north, I saw this string of lights in the sky. They weren't moving. Reverend Hesburgh told the press we could not see the body of the object because it was getting dark. It was absolutely still in the sky. The three men were in a boat 300 yards offshore. I could not tell how far away it was, the UFO, but to us it appeared to be just above the tree line on the side of the lake. Reverend Paul Beichner, former dean of the University of Notre Dame Graduate School, who was on the fishing trip 5 years ago, recalled there were 6 to 8 lights horizontal. The white lights were lined up like cabin windows in an airplane, except that the windows on a plane are much closer together. The lights remained stationary for about 5 minutes. It was something that I had never seen before. I can't explain it. It wasn't an airplane, helicopter, balloon, or any kind of swamp gas. It was that the lights suddenly went out, rather than the object taking off. It just disappeared. The third man in the boat was Peter Allard, a hunting and fishing guide in the area for more than 50 years. He confided, "It was so weird. There's no doubt in my mind that we saw an unidentified flying object from outer space." Father Hesburgh, former head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, Federal Government Civil Rights Commission, believes the government should disclose to the public the information it has on UFOs. "I'm for explaining these phenomena we don't know about. I happen to believe in extraterrestrial intelligence, but I see no reason why we should fear it. It would have to be more evolved than we are." Bravo to you, Father Hesburgh. Even though you're caught in religious opiates, you can see that no other civilization could survive to be able to visit other planets unless they had worked out their internecine warfare and their competitive rivalries and overcome such evil weaponry as nuclear warheads and germ warfare and so forth. Nonetheless, we cannot find anything that would be that important to say. New drug successfully controls high blood pressure without bad side effects. Medical researchers say a new drug has the potential for a major breakthrough in controlling high blood pressure, which afflicts an estimated 27 million Americans. The drug, captopril, our medical department should take down, CAPTOPRIL RSQ1, 4225, was dramatically effective in controlling hypertension in tests at 3 major university hospitals without showing 1 dangerous side effects. Captopril is especially promising for patients with tough-to-control blood pressure, said Dr. Chobanin, director of the Cardiovascular Institute at Boston University School of Medicine. It potentially could be one of the most promising breakthroughs in treating high blood pressure in all time. Dr. David Case, clinical director of the Hypertension Center at New York University Hospital, Cornell Medical Center, said Captopril is better than any other medications because to date we have not noted one side effect. He explained the other drugs have side effects that make some people feel worse than when they weren't taking medication at all, so they stopped taking the medication. Researchers say the drug works by blocking production of a hormone that constricts blood vessels, while at the same time causing buildup of another hormone that actually relaxes blood vessels. The drug has controlled difficult cases of high blood pressure in tests at Lausanne, Switzerland, the Cornell University Center, Medical University Moscow, and Boston University. Among the patients was a man who had suffered from high blood pressure for years and had cardiac failure. Intravenous drugs provided only temporary relief. The man's blood pressure was lowered to non-dangerous levels using Captopril pills, but 3 times a day for 7 days at the hospital and later under prescription at home. Patients with less severe high blood pressure are still required to take daily doses of captopril. In all cases, treatment must continue indefinitely. Doctors hope that the drug can someday be used at home without taking it first in hospital. Captopril, developed in pill form by E.R. Squibb and Sons, is being tested on some 1,150 patients at 7 other medical research centers. It will be at least 2 years before testing is completed and the drug can be formally marketed. Yet Dr. Case is so encouraged by the preliminary results that he predicted the new drug will be a major step forward in the treatment of high blood pressure. It will be called a miracle treatment. I cannot, as I said, stop if I hear anything that might be newsworthy and varied from the usual plan. Pentagon rejected a plan that would have saved taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars yearly in outmoded weapons just created for profit by rich corporate influence that lobbied in Washington. The armed forces poured an unnecessary $477 million into wasteful production of outmoded weapons in last year. President Carter's popularity has slipped, not necessarily because of the performance in office, said the New York Post. It is Daffy family and friends, three top psychiatrists agree. It's an effort, obviously, to discredit the president. People are just disgusted with the circus atmosphere surrounding the White House since the Carter clan took over. His family and friends are just too kooky, said Dr. Marvin Zipporin, who is psychiatric consultant at the Illinois State Department. Public opinion polls have shown Carter has slipped badly, down to the 30% in popularity, prompting speculation that Americans are losing confidence in the president and his ability to cope with such problems as inflation and the nearness of a nuclear war and general trouble abroad. But it isn't the real truth, as psychiatrists say. His loss of popularity has little to do with the major political issues of the day. People just don't like the idea of a president whose family and friends act like a bunch of screwballs. He says his feuding mother and cousin Hugh, Lillian and Hugh, Hamilton Jordan, one of his aides in bad publicity and criminal allegations against his chief economic advisor, Bert Lance, Brother Billy, and a young woman compete on a TV show, All Star, Anything Goes, aim is to make a peanut sandwich. It's this kind of behavior that has lost the respect of the presidency, says so these prominent psychiatrists. I'm sure that the American people would not judge, surely, a president by his relatives, but maybe so. One of his top assistants, Hamilton Jordan, has been reported as leering at the bottom of the moral corruption. He is in the bosom of the Egyptian ambassador's wife and spitting booze down a woman's blouse in a bar. His, Carter's brother, Billy, is out to make a buck any way he can, in any immoral fashion. Carter's daughter brings a book to the table to read at state dinners. Comic books. His mother is feuding with his cousin Hugh. It just goes on and on. Americans got their first shock when Jimmy admitted to having lust in his heart in a Playboy magazine interview. But at the time, they thought it was a minor slip of the tongue. But he was really a fairly stable fellow. But now he is seen as a member of a kooky family, which is rather common, very crude, and certainly not up to what the U.S. people want for president to stand for. Their confidence is shaken. Dr. James Russell, former assistant commissioner of the New York State Department of Mental Hygiene, said what's affecting Carter's popularity so badly is people are now judging him by his family and friends. And frankly, they have decided that the Carter's clan is nothing but a bunch of weirdos. When people voted for Jimmy, they looked up to him. They assumed they were electing a dignified, respectable, conservative man. Of course, that's the view, because there's a conservative right-wing neo-fascist mood in the air today. A man who would restore dignity and good judgment to the White House. I wonder why not a little honesty. But since then, they have found, they also elected Billy. Amy, who enjoys comics, she even brings these comics to tables and discretionally reads them right in the front of distinguished guests. People yearn for a first family with impeccable manners and breeding, says many psychiatrists. But since the people have found that they also elected Billy, Lillian, Amy, Rosalind, Cousin Hugh, Ham Jordan, Bert Lance, and a whole bunch of unconventional and even criminal elements who run around making headlines and make the country look foolish, and they're feeling hoodwinked and deceived. Dr. Zipperin summed up, people yearn for a first family with good manners and good taste and good breeding. We don't just want plain folks in the White House. We want something special. And the Carter clan does not live up to expectations, according to New York Post, the racist publisher. We all know him. He's the one, the big press magnate, that started out the lies against us in New West. Americans never expected that the president's kin would turn out to be nothing but weirdos and kooks. Thus ends the article by Belcher in the New York Post. And the magnate of racism speaks again. They also mention that it is not in Carter's good interest that Fidel Castro has said he prefers him over any other presidential timber, that he is just unfortunately ill-advised and corrupted and intimidated and made afraid by the might of the military-industrial class. Thus ends the reading and commentary of the news. Good day and good love and good production. Let's step up our production, step up our house cleaning. We have a guest coming. We need our place beautified as beautified can be. Thank you very much.
Plans. Closer one loose to a nuclear power plant in the United States give great, great chances of dying of cancer. The grim warning comes from the University of Pittsburgh Department of Radiological Physics, whose frightening and awesome study has found a direct link between cancer rates spiraling in USA and how far or how close rather people live from nuclear reactors. Top State Department official says that the world, this planet, must prepare to know how to make contact with outer space beings. Aliens from other worlds pose a possible threat to mankind, said High State Department U.S. official, and we may be courting global disaster unless we prepare now for eventual contact with outer space beings, warns the top U.S. State Department official, Michael A.G. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-U-D, Deputy Director of the State Department's Office of International Security Policy, said from an obviously limited capitalist perspective that we should consider how to respond to a potentially hostile extraterrestrial or extraterrestrials when we do make contact with them. If the extraterrestrials were hostile, it would only be because they had run in to limited capitalist or racist species. Because obviously any planet in outer space, and now most scientific opinion believes that there is life in outer space on several million planets, would be advanced to that of this solar system. And those aliens from other solar systems would have to advance to a high degree of socialism and communism, would likely, no doubt, pose no threat to capitalists and those who have been divided along national and ethnic lines, because if they had been a capitalist system, they would have destroyed their own planet by weapons of inhumane warfare. The only way that they would possibly be concerned about this planet would be probably to isolate it as a threat to the rest of the universe. But that is not the view of the USA, of course, and this deputy director Michael A.G. Michaud of the State Department's Office of International Security Policy. Aliens from other solar systems he sees as a definite threat to the capitalist world, of course. Regrettably, the stereotype of the benevolent, super-intelligent alien may be unrealistic in the eyes of the capitalist State Department, but it's certainly much more likely to be that of a benevolent, super-intelligent being than the stereotype of bug-eyed monsters carrying off shapely human females. But the U.S. State Department says we must consider the possibility that extraterrestrials possibly possess the know-how and the power to destroy our world. Of course, they would and could, with the many sightings that have been seen, but obviously they have not, for they do not need to, because this planet is so lowly evolved. A civilization that has developed a technology which has carried them across the stars, said U.S. State Department, could very likely be one that could smash the world if they so desired. The State Department thinks it is very conceivable. But again, that shows the U.S. State Department's, international department's, limited capitalist perspective. Obviously, when you advance in socialism. It is the highest form of the evolutionary scale, and it can only be a higher form of socialism that would enable a planet to unify and transfer space. It would be interesting to hear the views of someone from a communist nation, because obviously this shows the primitive view of an earthling with racist and capitalist views in the center of monopoly capitalism. Irvin Pickus, Deputy Director of the State Department's Office of Space Affairs, also agreed that the USA ought to be ready to deal with a potential alien threat. Contact with other world beings is something that would have tremendous repercussions if it happened, and we weren't prepared. You can see the hopelessness of USA, the hopeless ethnic, nationalistic, and now universal prejudice. Micah 39, a 15-year State Department veteran, believes an international panel of experts from many fields should be set up immediately to consider how mankind should respond to contact with outer space creatures. There's very little serious attention given to this subject by people outside of science, he added. Said they might be able to erase human life on Earth with chemical or germ warfare, by blasting us from orbiting vehicles, or with weapons that make the atomic bomb look primitive by comparison. Again, I say that shows the limitation of capitalism, because if they had such ability, they would have blown their own universe, their own planetary system up. Because people who have weapons of warfare either destroy themselves or they will not be able to develop such a high degree of technology that they will traverse through space. If they do, they have learned to live peacefully with other beings, and certainly the beings on their own planet, and would be not likely to try to bring harm to this planet unless it was in some way endangering the rest of space. It's always interesting to see how a capitalist looks at matters of that sort. The usual skirmishes continue along the Cambodian and Vietnamese border. A call by Radio Sweden for talks between China and the Soviet Union was exercised earlier in the day for fear that the two powers were on a collision course. Even the social democracy of Sweden felt that it was inconceivable that two socialist nations could aid USA, as that was the perspective of the social democracy of Sweden, aid USA and its primitive programs in Africa. That, again, is just a perspective. In the Chinese view, if they think nuclear war is inevitable, I suppose if one were looking at a Chinese perspective, it would not be considered that way. Certainly just a meeting of China and USSR would not solve anything. It would have to be peace between all of the major nuclear nations. That still reveals, I think, a little bit of the prejudice of the social democracies. They're still too capitalistic in their orientation. There'd be no need for talk of peace, no need for talk of peace between USSR and China, unless it included all of the rest of the world. It is the capitalists that endanger the security of the world. Nokia threatened job programs. The Supreme Court ruling sets the stage for all anti-affirmative action in employment, and it has been happening throughout the nation. As you know, the court ruled 5-4 in the Nokia decision that a medical school minority admissions quota is in violation, of all things, of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. If the court majority applies the same logic to quotas in employment as it is appeared to be doing throughout the nation, affirmative action programs will be ended, and it will mark a setback for the struggle of many decades against job discrimination. Paper mill union strike. A wave of strikes in the paper mill industry is making mincemeat of the Carter administration's anti-inflation campaign to force workers to accept lower wages. In three separate contract expirations, paper mill unions refused to accept Carter's guidelines of a 5.5% in yearly increase. In Milliken, Maine, 2,500 paper mill workers at two plants walked out. After the rank and the file voted to reject the contract negotiated there by union leaders and the Great Northern Paper Company, the strike is the first at the mill since 1907. New England represents an era of liberalism, unfortunately, in labor that is not reflective of the United States in general. 3 weeks earlier, 1,600 workers of the Boise Cascade Mills in International Falls, Idaho, walked out over the same issue. The strike lasted over a month, much longer than either union leaders or the company had expected. It ended when the company upped what had been the final wage offer. And negotiations are continuing in Portland, Oregon, between the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers and 23 paper companies. The Carter administration has intimidated that union, however, into moderating its wage demand of a 30% increase over 2 years. Administration official Bill Bodsworth, director of the Council of Wage and Price Stability, denounced the union's demands as outsides and alarming and subversive. Bodsworth's statements is the first instance of direct intervention in pre-strike bargaining by the Carter administration. Of course, we've known the Carter administration to interfere militarily, or threaten to do so, with the union workers and the postal workers, the mine union workers and the postal workers, because free labor, the free trade union, is actually as dead as the dodo bird in USA. Last month, authorities found Private Manuel Pena hiding in an unused mess hall at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego. He was weak and dehydrated from his 7 weeks of being absent without leave. Pena, P-E-N-A, in San Diego, was seeking refuge from the kind of brutality which recently took the lives of two young Army recruits at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. They were black. However, several whites have also died in what has been recorded as 70 at the Fort Jackson, South Carolina base. Those two blacks were killed on their first day of basic training. Temperatures at Fort Jackson peaked at 99 degrees on the day of their death, high enough to officially prohibit intense training. Recruits Lester Watts and Wayne Crathall, both 17, died of cardiac arrest in the cooler evening hours when their training should have been completed. Doctors later indicated that Watts and Crathall suffered the cardiac arrest, heart failure due to the exhaustion, the torturous exhaustion by the sergeants drilling them in the heat wave. Meanwhile, in San Diego, California, similar brutal training requirements drove the 20-year-old Marine recruit, Pina, to go AWOL. Marine authorities discovered him hiding in the obsolete mess hall. He had apparently subsisted just on water. Pina had escaped from the physical conditioning platoon because he could not pass a physical fitness test. It was considered absolutely fascist by one psychiatrist in San Diego. Pina's physical conditioning platoon has formerly been dubbed the Motivation Platoon. Motivation for what? Brutality? Authorities changed the name following the 1976 death there of Private Lynn McClure, who was beaten to death in a pugil stick exercise in motivation training. U.S. is filled with violence and bestiality. The unemployment dropped that wasn't. The U.S. Department of Labor reported that unemployment fell dramatically to 5.7% last month in July, but even the government's own economists could not explain the sharp drop, and they finally concluded that their own statistical system must be at fault. The figure, asserted Charles Schultz, chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers, might be a statistical aberration. The drop from 6.1% in June was the sharpest decline in 4 years. How such a decline could have occurred without a corresponding increase in worker output left the economists mystified and caught in their hypocritical figuring. And the two surveys from which the figures were drawn showed unemployment percentages differing by nearly a point. The department's statistics showed that the decline was attributable predominantly to a drop in white unemployment, mostly among teenagers. Black teenagers still suffer from a 57% official rate compared to white teenagers of 17.6%. Some 27.6% of black adult men are unemployed by the government's count, compared to 13.4% of white men. Now they come up with these damnable figures of 6.1% is incredible. It defies my understanding, anyway, of statistics. The government official figures do not include discouraged workers, those who have given up looking for a job. Oh, that's how it is. Nor do the figures include those who took part-time work but need a full-time job. The U.S. Labor Department, in its lies called Statistical Studies of Unemployment, has begun publishing unofficial quarterly estimates of the workers in three categories, though a tacit admission that the official figure is low. The inclusion of the other categories would triple or quadruple the official figures, according to last month's report. Social Security files increasingly up for grabs. The Social Security Agency computer system, one of the most extensive within the federal capitalist bureaucracy of USA, contains detailed medical and financial data covering more than 170 million U.S. residents. To qualify for federal retirement, disability insurance, and Medicaid programs, which are going to go out of business fastly with the new Resolutions 13 that are being passed and considered in 26 other states, potential recipients are obliged to furnish the government with highly sensitive information, including their marital status, their drug or alcohol use, and replete medical data. But last week, the General Accounting Office, USA Capitalism, GAO, the Congressional Investigative Arm, charged that the Social Security Administration files are not properly safeguarded from potential loss, destruction, and abuse and misuse by other investigatory agencies, and even private use of harassment. And additional evidence indicates that local, state, and federal police state agencies have in recent years increasingly pried open the Social Security Administration files to pursue their repressive and oppressive work. The GAO investigation outlined four security weaknesses within the massive computer network. Federal, state, and private offices can gain access to the files or create new files from most of the 3,900 computer terminals fanning the country in a true Orwellian 1984 nightmare. Employees can tamper with the files or delve into them without identifying themselves. The Social Security Administration system for locking the computer terminals is inadequate. Due to the location of the computer terminals, virtually every employee can probe the files without difficulty and invade the privacy of over 170 million U.S. citizens. The GAO undertook the investigation after embarrassing disclosures that Social Security personnel used the files for personal profit and even extortion. In one instance, the GAO discovered that a private company built a flourishing business by gaining unauthorized access to federal medical records and selling the information to the nation's largest insurance companies. Even more important, however, Commissioner Don Warman noted that last December that despite regulations designed to ensure privacy, there has been a progressive erosion of the agency's frequency of resisting police agency demands for personal information that could be damaging to one's personal freedom. We agree with the overall recommendation, explained Commissioner Wardman last week in reaction to the GAO report, and we are considering taking steps, I'm sure, just considering, to ensure that personal information in our computer system is made more secure, whatever the hell that means, a lick and a promise. But the Social Security Administration's past performance casts doubt on the prospects of the agency sternly protecting recipients' privacy. 7 months ago, the agency attempted to mollify Congress with pledges of tightening up its security. But last month, a congressional report noted that the agency's lack of locks and personal controls had contradicted previous assurances. Interestingly enough, we think we should inform you that we were attempted to be set up by the conspiracy in an awesome way. We had been informed very cleverly by the conspiracy where Norm and Imes had been sent in to our community as an infiltrator. However, our own investigation revealed that was totally untrue. That he is in no way anything other than loyal. That monies had been brought to the community, but communiques by one who is a traitor have not been passed on. A clever situation was set up, being that we have not ever done anything criminal, in which they hoped that we would perhaps do something, I suppose, to him, thinking that he was a member of the fascist conspiracy and racist conspiracy, I might add, Nazi conspiracy, that was spearheaded originally by one Nazi Kleinman with a press Democrat, and police officers of San Francisco, and police officers of Los Angeles, and Treasury officials, custom officials, and Senator Stennis's own henchmen, postal authorities. We now have affidavits to show. One woman has stepped forward, revealing that all of our mail has been tampered with, every bit of our checks, that we had been the investigation brunt of every agency in the state and the federal government, And she has stepped forward, giving that information, which we now have in signed affidavit by witnesses. So there is no end to which this conspiracy will reach, to try to even do violence to people, or get people to internalize their own fears, apprehensions of a dread and real fascist enemy. But we are glad to report to you that Norman Ives was not and is not an infiltrator. We would bear to you in mind not to try to give communications to anyone that is in our community to carry out, because so often you get sucked into things thinking that you know a true situation and do not. We have to have highly sophisticated intelligence measures, and we do. So we find those who are violating our own security that way. We're glad to say that Norman Ives is in our community as one of us, and they did not succeed. The conspiracy did not succeed. All may relax and communicate with him, and we want you to feel that way as we do security checks on others, which we now are advised to do to all community members that come because of clear proof of infiltration, as the foreign ministry said, by the CIA in our stateside work. We will clear people on a one-to-one basis. You can communicate and do a good will, but do not, and I say do not, relate any negative gossip to anyone, be they members of this community of law residents or newcomers. We do not speak in gossip. We do not speak in criticism behind anyone's back. Any criticism is welcome. Constructive criticism brought to this office. No attempt to get anyone to carry a message out for you, because we had an incident to show that there might have been a move to appeal to someone inside if they thought it would work with that conspiracy several months ago when we were intruded upon. We're glad for peace and no acts of violence against us, and we certainly have no acts of violence against each other, not even to strike one another or to spank in many, many months. We are grateful for that peace from external threats, and the internal peace that we are enjoying. All be friendly and normal. It's very doubtful that you are infiltrated by anyone at this point. As I said, we call it on one-to-one basis. We do ask that people be kind enough to accept the leader's wishes about whether they come or they go, and when they are free to travel to and fro. There is no need to look back at the United States at this particular time, because several of our people are being framed. Well, we will come out victorious, because the truth is on our side. Principle is on our side. We cannot know defeat when you stand for principle. Attorney General Bell won his stay of contempt, as we told you yesterday would probably happen. He's off the hook for a while, thanks to the way the bourgeoisie capitalist law bends for the faithful. Most people cannot appeal a contempt order until the entire case is decided. But last week, Bell got a court order to stay the order finding him in contempt for failing to turn over files on the 18 FBI informers that had done all sorts of illegal things in the COINTELPRO program against socialists. The order relates to the $40 million damage suit filed by the Socialist Worker Party for illegal FBI surveillance and harassment of that party. The SWP is a opponent of the teachings of Leon Trotsky, internationalism, armed struggle, simultaneous violent armed struggle in all nations at the same time, which is unworkable and unrealistic. But they have a right to their opinions, and they have a right to their privacy being safeguarded, and they have a right to be protected from criminal acts, and they have the right to demand their files. That's what the U.S. has said. They're cleaning their house and had Freedom of Information Act that gave them the right to their FBI files. But no, Attorney General Bell, former Ku Klux Klan member, highest law enforcement official in the USA, decided otherwise. And he got by with it. No one else in the history of the United States has been able to appeal a contempt order until the entire case was heard before the court, or decided before the court. The FBI spurred the Klan in Alabama. FBI agents of the Ku Klux Klan are not merely informants, they are actual instigators of Klan violence. Recent revelations by former FBI informer Gary Thomas Rowe Jr. suggest that he acted as an agent provocateur and that the agency knew of and covered up Klan shootings and bombings that he took part in. The revelations came out of investigations into Klan violence by the Alabama State Attorney General's Office in cooperation with the Birmingham Police Department Attorney General Bill Baxley, who had been rather liberal but moving more to the conservative bend, even he is, as USA is in a right-wing, neo-fascist mood. He started the investigation in 1975 in what appeared to be an effort to win black votes in his campaign for governor. Then he moved rightward after he became established in his office and did not succeed in the governorship. These facts came to light last week. Rao told Alabama authorities he shot and killed a black man in 1963 during urban rebellions in Birmingham. He told FBI agent Byron McFaul about the killing and was advised to just sit tight and don't say one damn thing else about it. That's nice. Rao apparently took part in the 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, in which four black children were murdered. They were all friends of Angela Davis, and it was that horrible act of violence against her four children, friends, schoolmates, that caused her to ultimately become a communist, by her own statements to us when she met once with us in friendly rapping at San Francisco People's Temple. In 1976, he had given Alabama authorities the names of nine people involved in the bombing, and 75-year-old Klan member Robert Chambliss was finally convicted in November of last year. During the recent reopening of the case, Rao, FBI agent, failed two lie detector tests in which he claimed he was not involved in the bombings. Rao, FBI agent, has accused the agency of covering up its role in Klan violence by getting rid of his files. The FBI said they had no comment on the recent revelations. The investigators and press appear ready to discredit Rao as an unreliable source, that is, the capitalist press, particularly since he may have disclosed the incident in an effort to avoid future prosecution. Rao presently has a grant of immunity for testimony in the church bombing case. The FBI's chief contact in the Ku Klux Klan during the 1960s, Rao, has also admitted to taking part in the killing of civil rights worker Viola Liuzzo. L-I-U-Z-Z-O, I was there at that demonstration near Selma, Alabama. She was a great activist from Michigan. Three Ku Klux Klansmen were convicted for that murder in 1965. Receiving very light sentences when Rao testified under a grant of immunity. He said he was present at the killing, but only pretended to shoot. In 1975, Rao testified before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence that the FBI had asked him to take part in the violent murder and other such violent attacks. Rao received monthly payments of $20 to $300 for providing information and carrying out the bidding of the FBI between 1960 and 1965. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, under the leadership now of William Webster, member of four racist and sexist clubs, also provided money for his Klan dues, robes, car mileage, and other expenditures while taking part in the murders in the Ku Klux Klan. I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. Truong, Humphrey, get 15 years. I'm not a spy or anyone's agent. My mind is totally at peace. These were the words of David Truong, T-R-U-O-N-G, as he faced federal Judge Albert Bryan. Before he and Ronald Humphrey received 15-year sentences on trumped-up spy charges last week. Like the Judas and Ethel Rosenberg case 24 years ago, the government is using the spy case to fuel its new Cold War campaign. Mike Tigar, David Truong's defense attorney, said the case is evidently a means of discrediting those in the United States who are working for a reconciliation and normalization between the United States and the Socialist Reunified Republic of Vietnam. Truong, an anti-war activist, and Humphrey, a former employee, high-ranking of the U.S. Information Agency, were accused of passing government documents labeled confidential to Vietnamese in Paris. According to John Margie, who works with Tigar, the government was never able to prove that the documents were even remotely secret and that their release threatened in any way national security. The documents included, for example, an Indian ambassador's comments on Vietnam, of all things, the Woodcock Commission's views on reconciliation that was public, and a schedule of Air France flights into and out of Vietnam that was a matter easily obtained from any airlines. The government had named Vietnamese UN ambassador Dinh Ba Thai and three other Vietnamese in Paris and Hanoi as unindicted co-conspirators. The U.S. capitalist or imperialist ordered Thai to leave the country. He refused, but then left for Vietnam February 11 last of this present year, when recalled by his government. It's an attempt to discredit the Soviet Union and her allies, because Vietnam is a faithful ally of the United Soviet Socialist Republics, which has been a vanguard of liberation in Africa. U.S. prosecutors move with unusual speed to get a conviction in the case. The two were arrested January 31 and convicted May 19 in an Alexandria, Virginia trial that lasted only 9 days. Appeals are planned in the federal courts. The defendants will also appeal in the refusal of bail, which has not been granted, and they're going to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. If the lower court ruling is upheld, it would set two new and dangerous precedents that seriously undermine civil liberties and give the government a freer hand in repression of all left elements. First, the conviction established the power of the president to tap telephones without a warrant in cases where he deems it to affect national security. Second, it allows the government to consider many of its internal documents as matters of national defense when they're even matters of public record, no matter how little they really had to do with questions of governmental security or defense. This gives the United States capitalist imperialist government the power to call anything a public record documents of national security if they want to eliminate someone as a political threat, a dissident, whatever their hue or stripe or color. This, apparently, I gave you the first part of the immediate news, the most dangerous part of the news, I guess. Chicago police attack Iranian student office. An attempted firebombing of Iranian Student Association offices reported last week when two Molotov cocktails landed in a puddle of water. They failed to bring about the result to destroy those who were protesting the horrible Shah of Iran, one of the oil-rich magnates who may have nuclear weapons, and in the crash of 1979 depicted as the one man that will trigger the nuclear war that will destroy much of the northern hemisphere. An Iranian Student Association spokesperson said the would-be arsonist tossed the homemade devices through a hole in the back door window. "We were lucky," He continued, they landed on the kitchen floor, which was covered with water from a leaking pipe. It could have been terrible and killed all of us. Students who unlocked the office the following afternoon discovered the soaked remains of the bomb and minor smoke damage to a refrigerator and other kitchen equipment. No one was there at the time, but just a few that were guards. But we're sure this is the work of SAVAK, the Iranian CIA. It has been built and set up by U.S. CIA, said the spokesperson. The arson attempt came just several days after Chicago police had raided the ISA offices just 4 days before. Police ransacked the Iran House offices and beat and clubbed at least 24 Iranian student members. 8 students were arrested, charged with misdemeanors and various frame-ups, and released on cash bonds ranging from $3,500 to $10,000 each. The attack took place at 11:30 p.m. on July 19 as some 70 ISA members were conducting a meeting inside their headquarters. Iranians standing near the doorway said they heard several small explosions near the entrance and went out in time to see a young man riding away on a bicycle shouting, "Up with the Shah, the fascist Shah of Iran." He joined 2 other youths a block away. Police pulled up and chased the Iranians back into their offices as the students went out to confront the youths at the corners. One of the youths later told the arrested students that he had received $100 to plant the cherry bombs near the doorway by members of the Chicago police. Also, it was suspected that the SAVAK, the CIA, the murderous fascist secret police of Iran, have Chicago police connections. Well, the calumny and infamy of fascism seem to have no reach, no depth, or no end, rather. The war strains in the Ethiopian economy are being felt heavily because also of the cloud seeding, other weather modification of the CIA, and the rebel, the reactionary rebel backing that has been getting the support of USA and her lackeys. Ethiopia has, however, as you know, the matter of news, reconquered its major Eritrean cities, and apparently the peace of Ethiopia is pretty well established at this time. The Ogaden region is totally under the control of the Ethiopian socialist government that has been bravely backed by Cuba and the Soviet Union. The Organization of African Unity, as you know, upheld the right of Cuba and the Soviet Union to give full support to any African nation that called upon it. Puerto Rican fishers press struggle against U.S. Navy. The people of Puerto Rico continue to mobilize to protest U.S. naval control of their island, one of the islands just in the southeast part of the Puerto Rican territory. In early July, approximately 100 people from La Isla Nina, the baby island, and supporters from La Isla Grande, the big island, entered and occupied restricted Navy lands. They set up an agricultural camp, cleared a plot of land, and planted it with a variety of local fruits and vegetables. The purpose of the activity was to challenge the Navy's fascist occupation of 75% of the land of the island and to dramatize the potential productive use of the land were the Navy to leave what they're not even using in any way at all. The action represented a broadening of emphasis in protest activities which are previously centered on the fisher people's challenge to naval control and destruction of the best fishing areas of Puerto Rico.